One of the many causes attributed to voter apathy is out-of-control campaign financing. Corporate donations, PAC money, and soft contributions all hold their unfair share of influence over the major party contenders for nearly every elected office at the federal and local levels. But where can the average citizen go for information on the best government money can buy? I'm Rob Callahan for KVSC News, interviewing Larry Makinson of the Center for Responsive Politics in Washington, D.C. The center is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research group that specializes in the study of Congress and particularly the role that money plays in its elections.
You first began tracking patterns in political contributions in 1985 when you were with the Anchorage Daily News in Alaska, is that right?
Right. Yeah, I've been sort of on the trail of tracking money in politics for about 15 years now. And here at the Center for Responsive Politics, what we do is basically review all the records that are filed with the Federal Election Commission. Every contribution over $200 has to be itemized. And we try to categorize all the contributions by industry and interest group. In the case of PAC contributions or soft money contributions that come directly from a company, we look up and find out what that company does and categorize it accordingly. And in the case of individual contributions, we do it based on the occupation and employer of the donor. We also look for ideological donors, people who've given to an ideological PAC and then given to candidates who are supported by that PAC. But basically, it's a job of being detectives to try to figure out, with all these millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars coming into elections, what are the big picture patterns? Which industries are giving the money? Which companies and interest groups are supplying the money for the campaigns?
Okay, in all of your research, do you or have you found a specific industry or specific corporations or specific individuals who tend to donate more than the others?
Well, basically, industries that are regulated tend to be much more likely to reach into their pockets and give money to protect their interests when they're giving to particularly members of Congress or candidates for Congress. The financial sector, which is a broad sector, includes banks, insurance companies, also real estate firms, securities firms, has, ever since we've been tracking this stuff, has been the biggest overall sector contributing to American elections. Business groups in general we have 10 different sectors, from communications to defense to transportation, you know, you name it, we've got a category for it. And those have all been mostly tend to give money to Republicans. Lawyers and lobbyists is a business sector that predominantly gives money to Democrats, and it's quite often because the lawyers are on the opposite side of lawsuits over product liability, things like that. They don't want any kind of tort reform, which would limit the ability of people to sue companies for manufactured goods that go bad, and that could be a big issue this year. If George W. Bush wins the presidency and the Republicans hang on to Congress, tort reform is a phrase that we're going to be hearing a lot more of. And so a lot of lawyers, which is one of the biggest contributors to campaigns, are also giving money. On the top of the contributor list by organization is AT&T. And I think people don't think too much about the company that, you know, they send off their phone bills to, but they actually are very active in American politics. They've given so far more than $4.3 million, both to Democrats and Republicans. They have lots of interests before Congress, including one they're trying to get before Congress goes out of session this year, and to try to not have to sell off as many cable companies as they had agreed to earlier under the terms of a merger that they had. So there's lots of different reasons that groups have for giving money, but basically they want influence. They want to have a friend in high places who will look out for their interests after the election's over.
Okay, Larry, you mentioned George W. Bush, and I'm sure that others have done the same, but I've got an article in front of me from Wired News that talks a little bit about George Bush kind of touting some of the smaller individual campaign contributions he's had.
Well, that's actually very interesting. When Bush first started releasing his figures on who was giving to the campaign, at one point they actually put on their website every single individual who'd given money to the Bush campaign. And they didn't put it in a searchable engine, so all you could do is scroll through the names. And you had the sense, reading that, this was a campaign that was being supported by people giving a dollar, $5, $10, whatever they could spare out of the pocket change. Well, that was an interesting way to look at it, but in fact it was really hiding what the big pattern was. And when we analyzed the contributions, we found that in the case of Bush, and also, by the way, in the case of Al Gore, that 75% of their contributions they collected were from the maximum $1,000 limit that you can give to a presidential campaign during the primaries. So much as the campaigns like to talk about this being a grassroots effort with millions of Americans becoming engaged and chipping in their dimes from their piggy banks to these candidates, it's actually a much more rarefied crowd that gives that. In our whole database, we're talking about basically 0.1% of the American population that actually gives contributions of more than $1,000 in election campaigns. And this is not necessarily representative of the public as a whole.
Did you find the same thing with third parties, where candidates did they tend to try to diminish big donor contributions?
We actually see different patterns. We have not, because the money coming into Ralph Nader, for example, has been coming in late. What tends to differentiate mainstream candidates from third-party challengers is the size of their contributions. I know Pat Buchanan had much larger proportion of small contributions, and I think I'm quite sure that Nader has the same characteristic as well. The big ones supported by the big parties, the front top of the ticket candidates, almost always have networks of donors that they call up or that their staffs call up that can give that maximum $1,000. Pat Buchanan, Ralph Nader, I'm sure Harry Brown running for the Libertarian Party in the election, they don't have those kind of resources. And those really do tend to be more grassroots, much smaller contributions from a wider area.
Okay, and you've published Open Secrets, the Encyclopedia of Congressional Money and Politics, and that's, according to my notes, a 1,300-page volume.
Yeah, we stopped publishing the Open Secrets book. This was a big, thick book we did. It actually weighs 6.5 pounds. It has profiles of two-page profiles of every member of Congress. It breaks down where their money comes from. And after the 96 elections, we stopped publishing in book form and put it on the web. So that now, in fact, we have a website. It's opensecrets.org. And you can go there and actually look up your own zip code and find out who's contributed. You can look up the state of Minnesota or any other state, find out where the money's coming from in that state, how much is going to Democrats and Republicans, who the top donors are, what the biggest industries are. And you can look up every single congressional race in the country and every single congressional candidate and actually find out not only how much have they raised and spent, but where did it come from, which industries have invested in those candidates, and which industries will certainly want to be cashing in on that investment after the election is over. It's basically designed for any curious voter who wants to find out who are the people giving money to the election, who's paying for this thing. And we have all sorts of information on the candidates, on individual industries. You can actually look back at an industry, let's say the tobacco industry or the computer industry, and go back 10 years and track their contributions and find out who's gotten the most over the years, how have they split their money. All that information that used to be in a big, fat, thick book that cost $190 is now available for free on the web.
I'm actually looking at your website right now, and it is a very extensive site. I'm on the historical fundraising trends page, and I'm noticing that soft money is, or soft money contributions are five times this year than they were in 91, 92.
Oh, yeah, the big explosion in elections has come in money, has come from the group, the type of contributions that are unlimited, soft money contributions, also contributions that are completely off the books, these independent expenditure ads that we see, independent campaigns that groups are writing with so-called issue ads are running. In all the congressional districts that are really competitive this year, we're seeing those kinds of ads, and also in swing states. These are the ads that don't say vote for or vote against, but they're funded by outside groups that clearly give their preference in the ad. And there's no question that these contributions have gone way up. We're expecting that this is going to be about a $3 billion election just for the federal races when we get done. The amount of soft money going in there is probably going to rise to about $500 million, which is about double what it was in the 1996 election. So what this means is that there are more big investors in American politics And the thing you have to think about as a citizen is, you know, why would the CEO of a big company sign a check for $100,000 and send it off to the Democrats or Republicans? One reason probably would not be good government or a stronger democracy. If they're actually sending over corporate money or a union check, they better have a pretty good reason for giving it, and it's likely much narrower than the greater good of the country as a whole. It's to give them a sort of a front row seat and the ear of members of Congress, the next president. You know, one of the realities of the fact that the parties are relying more than ever on these soft money donations is that when the new administration takes office in January, when the new Congress comes to Washington, they're going to be carrying a briefcase full of political IOUs that's really going to weigh them down. They understand quite well that not only are the constituents watching them, the people who voted for them, but the cash constituents, the ones that put up the money for their campaign, those people are also going to be looking very carefully at what the next Congress does, what the next administration does. And unlike the voters, they don't have to wait 2 years or 4 years to make their voices heard. Of course, neither do voters. You can call your congressman, but you can bet that somebody who signed a big fat check is not going to sit back and go on to do something else. They're going to take a very active role in politics, and the more money you give, the more likely a politician is going to try to find some way to say yes to you if they can, just to return the favor, if nothing else.
And looking over the source of the top 100 donors, I see that a lot of them are still contributing on sort of ideological grounds, either to the Republicans or the Democrats, but a disturbing number, at least it disturbs me, are contributing about equal portions to both sides.
Yeah, exactly right. And this is one of the patterns that we've seen throughout the years, and we really are seeing it this year, because what we have in 2000 is an unpredictable election. We don't know. I mean, most congressional races, I can tell you today who's going to win just by looking at how much money they've collected. But we don't know who's going to control the House of Representatives. And there are about two dozen or so races in the country that are going to decide whether the Democrats are control or Republicans are going to control the House. We don't know who the next president is going to be. We do know it's going to be a pretty close race. And in an environment of uncertainty like that, a lot of businesses have covered their bets by giving to both sides. And these are not, for large part, ideological contributions, although every human being and every individual giving money probably has their preference. These are pragmatic contributions designed to let them deal with whoever's in power, whatever way the voters decide on Election Day, and whether the Democrats are in the White House or the Republicans are in the White House or the Democrats control the House of Representatives or the Republicans do. Some of the industries have really chosen sides. Tobacco is clearly on the Republican side. Oil and gas, they've got an oil ticket. They're very strongly on the Republican side. Pharmaceutical companies have been beaten up by the Democrats and are pretty strongly now on the Republican side. On the other side, trial lawyers are very Democratic. The Hollywood is very Democratic. The labor unions are 93% Democratic. And all those groups, from the trial, what the Republicans will call the greedy trial lawyers and the labor bosses, and the Democrats will charge about big oil and big tobacco and the big pharmaceutical companies, those groups have become enemies to the other side because they're not getting very much of the money. And what most American businesses have done is recognize that the best way not to become a political target, the best way not to wind up in the rhetoric of a campaign ad or the middle of a debate, is to give money to both sides. And that way, you'll never be attacked, or you'll rarely be attacked, if ever. I mean, how many times have you heard any of the candidates talking out against banks or against Wall Street? Or against the computer industry, which has scrupulously given money to both Democrats and Republicans and has grown to be, from out of nowhere, to being one of the biggest contributors to federal campaigns. Most businesses have chosen that safe ground in the middle, which is makes a lot of sense from a pragmatic basis, but once again, isn't exactly the kind of democracy that we had in mind when they all got together back there in Philadelphia in 1776 and tried to cook up a system that would be most representative of the people.
All right. Larry, the website is opensecrets.org, and I've got one last question for you. As an individual, as a little guy who doesn't really enjoy a lot of influence and is not a corporation or anything, how do I put a stop to this?
Well, I think the best thing you can do is surprise your candidates and surprise your local congressman by letting them know you're in on what's going on. I mean, one of the reasons we put this website up at opensecrets.org is so that you can actually have the same kind of information, anyone at home, any citizen can have the same information that a lobbyist in Washington would have about who's giving money to this candidate. Our job is basically to find what those patterns are, to watch, to let people understand where that money's coming from, and we hope to give people this information so they use it, so they contact their congressman. I mean, look, if every member of Congress, once they got to Washington, wherever their money had come from, had the feeling or the fear or got a chill in the back of their neck that the citizens, the people who they actually voted for them, the people back in the district, knew who their cash constituents were and were watching them, they would act differently. They would not reward cash donors with extra special favors if they think they're going to get caught, if they think the voters are looking at it. So the best thing you can do as a normal citizen, just to really begin to take some power, frankly, is to inform yourself, load up on this information. It's absolutely free. It's on the web at opensecrets.org. And then let them know you're watching. Let your members of Congress understand that you're watching. If you don't have this kind of information, actually, it is collected also for the state legislature in Minnesota, and that's also on our website. But basically, if politicians really thought that they were being held accountable, not just for the promises they make, but for the money that they take and for the favors that they may return on behalf of those cash constituents for their elections, they'd act differently, and we'd have a lot more, a lot better government that was much more responsive to the people rather than people funding the elections.
Larry Makinson from the Center for Responsive Politics. Thanks for the call, Larry.
Okay, thanks very much, and good luck to you.
This year's presidential election promises by far to be the most expensive ever, contrasting voter turnout projections that are expected to sink to an all-time low. For KVSC, I'm Rob Callahan.